From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Thinking sideways.
I don't understand.
Does not compute.
You never know.
Insufficient data to formulate a reply.
What?
Stories of things we simply don't know the answer to.
Hi there. Welcome to another episode of Thinking Sideways. I am Joe, joined as always by
Steve.
Devin.
Yeah. Well, and we're here to talk, of course, talk about another mystery.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I guess. If that's what you're into these days.
Yeah.
It's what the kids dig.
Yeah. Until we become a cooking show. That's not till next week.
Nah.
Don't tell anybody.
Yeah. How to make ramen.
Mm-hmm.
Very good at that.
Yeah. All right. So this week, we're going to talk about a very famous lost treasure, which you've probably heard of. If you haven't heard about it, well, you're in for kind of a treat. This one is called Yamashita's Gold. Also known as the Yamashita Treasure. You probably know of it as Yamashita because that's how it's spelled, but it's actually pronounced Yamashita.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
I remember because the first time I heard about this is, well, it was like 2 years ago when we talked to Roy Bainton, and he mentioned this when we were talking to him after we had finished the recording, and he had mentioned it, and he'd call it Yamashita as well. So I just...
A lot of people do.
Yeah, I figured that was the correct pronunciation. Good
apparently.
Thing you researched this and not me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Well, you never know. I mean, maybe his... It's actually a name, like somebody's given name, so maybe he actually did pronounce it Yamashita. The Yamashita of Yamashita's Gold was General Tomoyuki Yamashita, who was in command of Japanese forces in the Philippines from 1944 to 1945. And as you know, what was going on back then is like...
What was going on?
Oh, war.
Oh.
Yeah.
The second big one.
Oh.
Yeah, the second. The Japanese had been special guests of the Philippine people for a while now.
Special guests.
Along about late 1944, a bunch of Americans with guns showed up and said something on the order of, "We want it back."
This is ours now.
Yeah, we're going to take this here back. Let's talk about the treasure, though. The treasure came from all over the place. The Japanese invaded and occupied a lot of countries before and during World War II, as you guys know.
Mm-hmm. Brutally.
Yeah. Yeah, they were kind of harsh. Yeah. Those countries include China, Korea, Burma, Malaya, Dutch East Indies, Singapore, and, of course, the Philippines. And, of course, besides being kind of brutal, they also looted the places for all they could find. So they took a lot of gold, silver, platinum, precious gems and stuff like that.
I mean, I would.
I would too. Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah. Feel entitled at that point.
Yeah.
I worked so hard for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
According to some people, most of the loot was shipped down to Singapore, where it was reportedly was cataloged, and then it was shipped off to the Philippines, which is sort of on the way to Japan. From the Philippines, the booty was sent on to Japan, supposedly, along with the valuables that they stole from the Philippines also.
Mm.
And nobody knows how much of this loot actually made it to Japan, if any of it. Well, I'm sure a lot of it did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In 1942, though, after the Battle of Midway, the American Navy began to dominate the Western Pacific and started sinking a lot of Japanese ships. So probably a few of these had loot on board also.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah, it's sitting down there waiting for you if you want to go find it.
Get a snorkel.
Yeah, I know. At this point, then the treasure was kind of stuck in the Philippines because it's kind of wasteful to sit on a ship that's going to get sunk. So what to do?
Bury it.
Yeah, that's an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The U.S. invaded the Philippines in October 1944. Yamashita fought on for almost a year, eventually surrendered in September 1945. And to keep himself occupied in the interim, he did the usual military stuff, but also started hiding all the loot so that it wouldn't fall into Yankee hands. Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
And
I do it.
It is claimed that the treasure wound up being stashed in between 172 and 175 places, although I've heard other stories where it just was stashed in one enormous cavern.
Mm.
That is the one enormous cavern is kind of the fantastic version that I've come across.
Mm-hmm.
That's always the first one that pops up on your searches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems like it'd be easier.
To just do one?
Yeah.
Depends on how much stuff you got,
though. Throw it all in that cave. Put it under the dragon.
Yeah.
Is that not?
Excellent idea. Yeah, go recruit a dragon.
I will.
Yeah. Make sure Indiana Jones doesn't show up and you're fine.
You're fine, yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's always been my dream to find something like this, so wouldn't that be great? Yeah, anyway. Yeah, the method that they used was typically this. They would find a suitable hiding place, let's say a cave, and then a bunch of booty would be hauled in with soldiers or slave labor or both. Engineers would rig up booby traps so anybody trying to get in there would get killed. And then the cave entrance would be sealed or blasted shut with everybody inside, so that way they wouldn't be able to tell anybody where the treasure was.
That does sound a whole lot like Indiana Jones.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
I want my whip and everything.
Yeah.
We're going, man.
Yeah.
Incidentally, Yamashita's gold was featured in, not even though it was not named, but it's in Neal Stephenson's Cryptonomicon, which I know I plugged before.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've mentioned this book before.
Yeah.
Spoilers!
One of the main characters in the book is a Japanese guy who winds up getting conscripted in one of these, into hiding a fabulous amount of stuff in this cave. Because he's a clever guy, what they do is they seal it shut with him and a few other people inside it. Then they flood it. They divert a river, basically, to flood the cavern.
Hmm.
But he's engineered himself a way out, so he actually escapes.
Oh,
clever. Yeah.
Right. Way to spoil the book.
I know. I should have probably said plot
spoilers.
Yeah, oopsie.
Wait, go back. We'll edit it in. You ready? Spoilers!
The legend of Yamashita's gold has never gone away. And for decades, people have been looking for this, a lot of people, and they're still doing it today. And quite a few of them have gotten killed trying also.
Weird.
Nobody has ever found the treasure except for one guy named Rogelio Rojas, who we'll talk about a little bit later on.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe we'll talk. Maybe if you're good.
No,
if
I'm sorry. Lucky. I meant maybe he found it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's right.
We'll talk about him.
It. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or found a part of it.
We totally misinterpreted that.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about theories then.
All right. Let's do them.
That's a pretty short summation. So I guess we can talk about some of the theories.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to go through here in theories.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, there's several theories. One is that it's real and it's out there waiting to be discovered still.
So this are we doing kind of heading theories, right? Like we sometimes with my stories will do theory one, the gold is real.
But
sub theory one, the gold is real and this thing. Are we doing that sort of thing? Is that the construct here?
If by subhead, the gold is real, most theories, and then subhead or heading two, the gold is not real.
All right, yeah. Fair.
That's
fair.
That's just, yeah, my
so if we assume the gold is real,
yes.
Yeah.
The theories are
that, well, they just did a really good job hiding it, and it has yet to be found.
Can I?
But that's not, not really much to say about that one.
So this is something that, struck me a little odd. If indeed the Japanese did gather all of this up, mm-hmm. and they're looting everybody, mm-hmm. why is it always the gold that everybody talks about? Mm-hmm. There would have been all kinds of precious stones, mm-hmm. and things like that. I imagine artwork would have been collected.
Oh, yeah.
But why is it we only ever talk about the gold? I don't understand mm-hmm. what the... I mean, I understand that people have an obscene... lust for gold, but it's just funny mm-hmm. to me that that's the only thing that ever gets brought up.
Oh yeah, I just think that Yamashita's gold sounds like a cooler title than, you know, Yamashita's treasure. Maybe that's why.
Maybe Yamashita's stolen stuff.
Yeah. I
know. That doesn't sound so great.
Yeah, his loot. His but obviously they did. They did gather up, you know, jewelry and gems,
everything,
and platinum and silver, a lot of stuff besides gold.
Yeah.
They hoovered it all up.
Yeah. Well, they kind of. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're not the only ones that were doing that kind of stuff in that exact same time frame. I mean, that was kind of a common practice. But it's still, it's funny is that in this particular story that it's always just the gold that everyone talks about.
Mm-hmm.
So the Philippines are. Still do have enough kind of undeveloped lush areas that this is a feasible thing, that it just hasn't been discovered yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean,
I have no, I gotta be honest, I have no kind of scope of how saturated the population is on the Philippines.
I think I don't know much about the Philippines, to be honest with you. I know some islands have a fairly decent sized population mm-hmm. and some are, you know, practically deserted.
Sure. Yeah. Because that would be my question about this is, you know, is it even feasible that there would be 170 caches of
Well,
gold?
It's a pretty big area.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of islands.
You know, most of those islands tend to have all of their majority of their population centered in mm-hmm. one or two major cities
sure.
or ports.
Yeah. Mm.
So that leaves a lot of undeveloped rural areas.
Yeah.
I think that's why everybody's kind of saying, well, it's still got to be out there.
That's fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I still don't know exactly how the number 172 hiding places, where that exactly came up from. Some of those are not all on land either. Some
right.
of them, like around 40 or so, are supposedly underwater somewhere,
there
like in
go.
An underwater cave. Or,
sure.
Yeah. But I don't know.
They found a map that he was playing tic-tac-toe on and interpreted every X as a location for treasure.
It was a connect the dots.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, our next theory is this, which is that Yamashita's gold really was real, but the Americans got their hands on it. This theory is advanced in a book that's called Gold Warriors by Sterling and Peggy Seagrave.
Did you read any of this?
Of the book?
Yeah.
No, I went out to Amazon.com and I read the description, and then I went to the reviews.
Uh-huh.
And the reviews were very useful. They saved me from wasting my time with this.
Well, I read, they put out some like 3 or 4 page summation of their stuff. And I found that, and I read through it, mm-hmm. and they're really stretching, in my opinion. And I know we're going to go into some of this, but I was really surprised at some of the correlations, and I'm using air quotes here, that they made.
Yeah, they took a lot of liberties with the truth here.
let's have it.
So what they say is that intelligence operatives, probably from interrogating captured Japanese, they got onto the scent of the booty somehow, and then they really couldn't interrogate and torture Yamashita, so they grabbed his driver and tortured him for a while until he confessed. And since he was Yamashita's driver, he was driving him all over to all these locations, presumably. So he was
right
able
underwater
to,
and stuff. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And then they used all this loot that they found to fund black operations all around the world, including bribing politicians, buying elections, and all kinds of stuff.
Hmm.
And their book is supposedly very well documented, but to find out the sources of their information, you have to buy a bunch of CDs separately from the book.
Oh.
Yeah.
They don't actually list their references and sources like every other book I've ever read does?
Well, I think they do have citations in the book, but apparently if you want all their information, then you have to buy the CDs.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so and that's a whole separate price from the books.
They found the gold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know.
Obviously.
Yeah, this is
people
where the
buying
gold
their
is.
Stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like the gold rush. You know, the guys who really made out like bandits were the guys that went and sold shovels and stuff like that to all mm-hmm. the prospectors. You know,
yeah.
Prospectors all went broke.
Yeah.
Well, most of them did. Anyway, my favorite of all the reviews on there was a 1-star review from a guy named Angus Waycott, who has written a book called Sado, Japan's Island in Exile. And the Seagraves in their book claim that more than 1,000 Korean slave laborers vanished without a trace on Sado Island. And they cite Angus Waycott's book to support this. But according to Waycott, his book says no such thing. And so
that's a direct quote, right?
Yeah.
My book
is that
says
in his
no
Amazon review?
Thing.
Says that, yeah, it was on the Amazon review. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, what else did he say? He said it was a deliberate misrepresentation, and he also said it was shameful.
There you go.
And so, you know, after reading that review, I just figured I was going to leave it at that. I think you guys can go read the reviews on Amazon and decide for yourselves. But I think support for this theory is not really there.
Well, and like I said, yeah. I read some of their stuff, and it is really thin, and there is a lot of leaps of faith made in it.
Oh yeah, and a lot of the other critical reviews out there said the same thing. This is just poorly sourced, and one guy said this would make a fine little thriller to read at the beach when you're on vacation.
Nice.
Yeah, you shouldn't treat it as nonfiction.
Nice.
Yeah. So we'll put that theory to bed.
All right.
Yeah. Another theory is that under the gold is real thing is that maybe some Japanese soldiers who had knowledge of at least some of these places have gone back in the decades since and actually found some of this stuff and spirited it out of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
What
does not make sense to you?
Well, I'm just thinking about the state of Japan after the war and everything that's going on.
Well, I'm not
like
talking
you'd have
about...
to wait. Like somebody would have to wait at least a decade or two before they could even think to do it.
Oh yeah, I mean, no, you'd have to wait quite a while just for
the heat to die down,
just for emotions to die down in the Philippines. Because let's face it, they didn't behave themselves perfectly when they were there.
No,
and so you'd probably want to wait a decade or two before you went back,
unless it was, you know, in remote areas of the Philippines and you just get a boat. I mean...
Oh, yeah, sneak on shore. Yeah.
Or it's not on shore, it's underwater and you just...
Mm-hmm. Just come back. Yeah, that's a possibility. This is a fine theory and it's entirely possible, but it's sheer speculation. And I'm
it's absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm just throwing it in to waste everybody's time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe.
So, yeah, possible, but based on the evidence, I've got to give it a fail.
I guess you could, you know, with that kind of gold, bribe some officials in the Philippines.
Well, that's true, too. I mean, you could go to them and just say, hey, look, I know where there's a huge stash of gold.
Yeah.
Let's dig it up and you can have half.
Or you don't even say that. Or you just
pay them,
sneak in. And if you get caught sneaking out, you say, here's some.
Yeah, have a gold bar.
Have some gold.
Well, and as long as somebody melts it down, I'm assuming, of course, that it's in bar form and not in whatever original jewelry shape it was. If it's in bar form, they're in turn going to have to turn around and melt it down themselves, whoever's being bribed. Because what do they call it when they stamp gold?
I think it's called hallmarks.
Okay, because it would definitely have that a hallmark on it to indicate where it was from. And I would be a little... I mean, I guess if you're willing to take a bribe, you don't really care where it came from.
Mm-hmm.
But that could cause a lot of alarms to go off if you then turn around and try and pass that off.
Do you think that was something that was documented? Like, do you think they have records in the places that they were stolen from that these specific gold bars were stolen?
It just depends. I mean, if the records survived the war or not, you know, but a lot of buildings got destroyed.
Seems like the sort of thing you would destroy if you were taking stuff.
You might, yeah. But I mean, if something is stamped, you know, such and such bank, Shanghai, China, you know, then that's kind of a giveaway.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. And actually the hallmarks do play a small part in our story here in the future.
Oh, that's right.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on to our next theory. It's real and somebody has actually found some of it.
Oh.
That's the theory.
Yeah, that is the theory. Yeah. There is some evidence for this theory, unlike our other theories, which are all kind of like not really much evidence, or not really any evidence. Yeah. This is Rogelio Rojas, and we're going to tell his story, and it's kind of interesting. There's more information on this one because it was litigated in the 1980s and 90s, and so there's a fair amount of information available for this, and people testified in court and stuff like that.
Oh, so there's that legal documentation.
Yeah, yeah. There was a lawsuit. Rogelio Rojas was a locksmith in Baguio City, the Philippines, which is on the island of Luzon, which, you know, for all of you who know all about the Philippines, is where Manila also is.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's the most populous island in the Philippines. Again, I was too busy researching this to research stuff like that. He, besides being a locksmith, was also a coin collector and a treasure hunter. And in 1961, he met a man named Albert Futugami in Baguio City, who was a fellow treasure hunter, and they became friends. Futugami was the son of a Filipino woman and a Japanese soldier, and eventually Futugami took Rogelio into his confidence and told him that his father had drawn a map identifying the location of one of the treasure troves of Yamashita's gold.
Huh.
Yeah, he also, around the same time, met this other guy who has an unpronounceable name, who claimed to have served as General Yamashita's interpreter during World War II.
Eusebio Okubo.
Okubo? Okubo?
Okubo.
Okubo. Yeah, that sounds about right. He told him, this interpreter said that during the war he had been taken to some tunnels controlled by General Yamashita in order to get some silver to pay for food for the troops. And he said he saw boxes of various sizes that contained gold and silver. And also he saw a golden Buddha statue, which was at a convent very, very close by. And so with the clues that he got from this guy and the map that he got from Futugami, he partnered up with Futugami and they hired some laborers to search for the treasure. They got a permit and everything for it.
Wow.
Yeah, you're supposed to, because it was on government lands.
Sure.
If they were going to be looking.
Oh, yeah, that would be important.
Yeah, it kind of would be. In 1970, they began digging near the Baguio General Hospital in Baguio City. And after 7 months of searching and digging, they broke into a system of tunnels underground. You know, that's a good thing.
That would be exciting.
Yeah. Inside the tunnel, they found wiring and radios, bayonets, swords, rifles, and a human skeleton. Wearing a Japanese army uniform.
Mm.
Yeah.
Not that that was so uncommon for Japanese soldiers to have tunnels, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. No, not really. I mean,
it's fairly common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, for hiding in, that kind of thing.
Natural cave systems are great for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if this was a natural cave system or what.
I presumed it was a natural cave.
Even unnatural. I mean, that was a pretty solid part of their warfare strategy, wasn't it? It was tunnels.
Yeah. Dig in.
I think a lot of armies do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because the tunnel exists doesn't mean treasure exists.
Doesn't mean it was there for treasure. But they spent about a month in this tunnel, though. Actually, it was a whole series of tunnels, and they explored, and they didn't find anything. And then Rojas got himself a metal detector and went around and got himself a strong signal in one place. They dug a little bit, and they hit concrete. And they hammered through the concrete. I'm not sure how long it took to break through, but...
Weeks, probably.
Yeah, it could be. They found a room below the tunnel, and inside this room they found a gold Buddha, a solid gold Buddha.
Mm.
Yeah, which was, according to Rojas, about 3 feet in height. It was really heavy. It took 10 men to get it to the surface. They had to use a chain block hoist and ropes, and then they rolled it on logs through the tunnels, apparently. And Rojas guessed it was probably about a metric ton, and he told his men to take it to his house and put it in a closet.
Wait a second.
Yeah, I know.
Wait a second.
What? Wait.
It takes 10 guys to haul this out of the cave, and he's like, oh, yeah, and then take it to my house and put it in the closet.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, how do you get the rolling logs through your house?
This is unspecified. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, this part of his story mystifies me.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's other parts that mystify you, that mystify me too. But
okay,
he did manage to persuade a jury to believe his story.
I know, but
yeah.
I gotta be honest with you. The thing that mystifies me is that he was a treasure hunter who somehow didn't have a metal detector.
Mm-hmm.
Like he had to go out and say, "Oh, I'm gonna go get a metal detector."
Yeah,
1970.
In my mind, treasure hunters, the staple of treasure hunting is metal detectors.
Indiana Jones never had a metal detector on.
He wasn't a treasure hunter.
Yeah, he was.
He kind of was.
He was an adventurer.
Yeah. No, he was an archaeologist.
He was an archaeologist. He had an
even better reason to have a metal detector, and he didn't.
Yeah. He had an interesting style when it came to archaeology.
Yeah, that was what the whip was.
Just go in and steal some stuff.
Yeah.
Poke the walls.
Yeah.
Sorry, not to, we just
yeah, we just got
sorry.
Way off on the side there.
Yeah, back at the
Rojas.
Yeah, back to Rojas. Rogelio, about 50 feet from where the Buddha was, there was a big stack of boxes. They were stacked 5 or 6 high over an area 6 feet wide and 30 feet long, roughly. And he came back the next day and opened one of the boxes, and it contained 24 bars of gold. And he didn't open any of the other boxes. Now, I got this.
Which is weird to me.
Well, yeah, and I got this from, he actually died before this whole thing went to trial, but he gave a deposition before, and so this is from the court's documents. Mm. So this is from the mouth of Rogelio.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does seem a bit odd. I mean, I would be, if I saw a pile of boxes, I would open them right up.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe there would be snakes in one, though.
That's a good point. So I wouldn't open them right
now.
No, yeah,
you opened one, and it was like the right door, right? It was you chose the right door, so you just stay. You don't open all the rest of the doors.
that makes total sense.
I know.
Yeah.
That's why I am the one of us that keeps finding all the treasure.
Uh-huh, yeah. And I'm the one that gets bit by snakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I scream like a little girl.
Yeah. About several weeks later... They don't specify exactly in the court documents. He returned because he wanted to seal the tunnel closed. And so he was going to use dynamite to blast it closed.
Sure.
For safekeeping of the treasure, right? He returned to shut it. He took the 24 bars of gold then, and also some samurai swords and bayonets and other souvenirs. And some weeks went by after that. This is, by the way, they found the Buddha and the gold on January 24th, 1971.
Okay.
So this is in February when he's blasting the hole shut. And some time went by, and he sold 7 of the gold bars, and he was looking for a buyer for the golden Buddha. And his plan was to raise funds to go back and get the rest of the gold bars, which, you know, okay. That's a strategy.
Yeah. I guess sell a small amount of treasure to fund getting the rest. Yeah I got it.
Because
it'd
be heavy. You would need a lot of
stuff. Oh, you'd need a lot of manpower.
Yeah. In April 71, he showed the Buddha to 2 other people, and then he showed it to a third buyer, a guy named Joe Oyahara, who said he was interested, and he said he would come back in several days with ₱1,000,000 as a down payment. After he left, Rojas got curious about the Buddha, and he took a closer look at it, and he found out that the head was removable. So he got the head off of it, and he looked inside, and there was a compartment inside the Buddha that was filled with stones, which looked like uncut diamonds. So he scooped them out. He said there were about 2 handfuls of uncut diamonds inside the Buddha. He put the head back on. He put the diamonds, I guess, in a bag and put them in the closet next to the Buddha. So like, yeah.
Sure.
This guy's got a great safe system.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know. If it took 10 dudes to carry the Buddha out, it's not exactly going to walk up.
But the bag of diamonds will.
The bag of diamonds I would have taken out in my backyard and buried or something.
Yeah.
I think so.
We know.
Yeah.
We've searched in your backyard. I mean, we've never done
that. We helped you install that patio. We're digging for treasure.
It's booby trapped, by the way, so don't go near it.
Okay.
Yeah. So 4 days after Joe Oyahara came over to look at the Buddha, at 2:30 in the morning, 8 men from the Criminal Investigation Service and the National Bureau of Investigation came pounding on the door and demanded to be let in, they said they had a search warrant. So after Rojas opened the door, these 8 guys come inside. They are wearing military uniforms, and they've got Joe Oyahara with them. And they showed him a document that they said was a search warrant, and the soldiers beat on Rojas's brother with their rifles and made the whole family get on the floor. And then when they left, they took the Buddha, also the diamonds, the remaining 17 bars of gold, the samurai swords, a piggy bank belonging to the kids. And his wife's coin collection. So they cleaned them out. Yeah. So Rojas reported it to the media and also the local police. He also went to this judge who he knew. His judge's name was Pio Marcos. And he apparently was related to Ferdinand Marcos. I guess at one point, Rojas used to work for him, and that's how they knew each other. And also, Judge Marcos was the guy that he went to get the permit to dig on state lands.
Okay.
I probably forgot to mention that. He had noticed Marcos's signature on the search warrant that the police had showed him, and he asked why he had signed a search warrant, and Marcos said that he had no choice because Ferdinand Marcos had ordered it and said he'd ordered the confiscation. The whole pretext for them coming into the house is Joe Oyahara's companion had claimed to have seen an illegal gun in the house.
Mm.
So he filed the complaint. But this guy apparently had connections to Marcos also. So anyway, word had gotten back to Marcos that there was gold and a Buddha and all this stuff.
We all know who Ferdinand Marcos is, but I don't know that all of our listeners do. So you might want to let some people know who we're alluding to here.
Yeah, good point. Ferdinand Marcos was president of the Philippines, I believe, from 1965 to 1986. I know he was deposed in 1986.
Right, I do know that, yeah.
Yeah, he eventually became, you know, supreme dictator and all that stuff, lots of human rights abuses. Eventually there was a revolution in 1986, and he was ousted, and he and his wife, Imelda, of the 800 shoe collection.
Yes, Imelda Marcos.
Super, so, yeah. They went to political asylum in America, and they wound up living in Hawaii.
And that's how we've got all of this, because the lawsuit that you're referencing for this material was filed in Hawaii.
Yeah, it was. Judge Marcos also appeared angry, according to Rojas, that he had reported the case to the police and the media, and said as a result he would likely be killed. Yeah, so Rojas interpreted that as a threat, so he went into hiding for a little while. And then not too long after that, April 19th, 1971, the military deposited a Buddha statue with the city court in Baguio City. Apparently the same one.
This was in response to... I don't quite understand. So what did they do? They put it out front? Or...
No, they took it. They turned it in.
As like evidence? Or...
I don't know, I guess. The court doesn't really say why, but they basically took it in there and said, here's his Buddha back, because in response to all the unwanted attention that he'd been calling.
They said, we found this Buddha.
So, yeah, we confiscated it, but here it is back.
Returns,
you
know.
We thought it might be a dangerous Buddha.
We thought it was a bomb or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Smiling Buddha.
Yeah, I know. 10 days after that, Rojas went to the courthouse in Baguio City where the Buddha was. He was accompanied by a couple of bodyguards and a lawyer and miscellaneous reporters. And he examined the Buddha, and he said it was not the same Buddha that was taken from his house. He claimed its color was different. He said it had different facial features. Claimed the head was also not detachable. And so I'm not so sure about this, because I've seen pictures of him. His brother took pictures of him with the gold Buddha, two pictures of him. They're kind of low resolution, but you can see the Buddha pretty clearly. I don't know if you guys ever saw those pictures.
No, I didn't.
And there's also one from the trial, the lead up to the trial of Imelda Marcos looking at a Buddha. It looks like the exact same Buddha to me. He claims that the facial features are different, so it looks like the exact same
Buddha. But do you know that the one that Imelda Marcos is in front of isn't the one that they were trying to return to him?
That's the one that they were trying to return. He claimed was not the same as his original one.
Right.
But I've seen the pictures from before the Buddha was confiscated and then after, and they look exactly the same to me. Yeah, so...
Well, I mean, he did, you know, he made some claims about... markings on it from tests that were run and stuff, and I know that got refuted, and there's some controversy around that itself. Yeah. But the fact that the head doesn't come off, if he said the head comes off, that's kind of a important thing.
Yeah, that would be kind of an important thing. But the thing about it is he could have been faking that too, because he had a hard time getting the head off. He originally didn't know for quite a long time that the head came off.
Yeah.
And if 10 guys are hauling it around, I've got to guess they knocked it over at least once by accident.
Yeah.
You would think the head would have popped off.
Maybe. I mean, it took him. He had to whack the head with a piece of, like a 2x4 to
get
it to come off. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So he could have said, yeah, it comes off real easy, and then, it didn't come off.
Okay, but, I thought initially that the head was just loose.
Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. Actually, it was hard to get off.
But the pictures do show that the head was off.
Mm-hmm. In one of the black and white pictures?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do show that.
So that at least we know it did actually come off.
It did actually come off on the original Buddha. And again, the one that they left at the courthouse appeared to me to be the same.
Yeah, I mean, they look pretty similar.
They look pretty identical.
It's hard to tell with photo resolution of the time if the color is actually different, and it's a different angle, and there's like rope around the one in the black and white pictures versus the one in the court. There's not the rope.
Yeah.
So it's hard to tell, you know, lines that your eyes make without the rope. They might not make... It's hard to tell. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
I personally think the one with the rope, you can still see enough features. Like, look at the pecs.
They're not the same.
They're not?
No, I'm looking at it right now. If you look at the one that he has, it's got... you know the line on your face that runs from the corner of your nose?
The nasal labial fold?
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
I don't know how the hell you know that, but... I actually, as I've looked at the photos, and I had to pull them up real quick just to double check, I kind of think that they look different. I mean, as we were saying, I see differences in the face.
It's hard to tell for me just because it's I think they hit me as two different images, right? But I can't say, well, see, in this image it's this, and this image is that, because the resolution is so low in the original two,
that
and they're
is.
From a different angle than any of the other ones.
And
are
the
from.
Style at the time, they're very stylistically similar.
Well, yeah, they're from the same era.
Yeah, they're very, very similar, but I see differences in the face. So mm-hmm. I personally, I don't think they're the same one, mm-hmm. just based on what I've seen in the photos.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what I think.
His brother, Jose, who was there at the house when the police showed up and took it away, he testified years later, of course. He looked at it and testified that it was the same Buddha. That's what his brother said. So
yeah.
Yeah. So I know, confused.
Well, but they do. They look very, very similar. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, anyway, back to Rogelio. At this point, he went through a kind of a difficult 3-year period. He was arrested, beaten, tortured with electric shocks. They wanted him to sign papers, first of all, saying that the two Buddhas were the same, and they also wanted to know where he'd found it, because obviously, and the gold bars. Mm. Yeah, and he refused to talk. They let him go, but then he was rearrested. He managed to escape. He went into hiding for a while. Eventually, he was caught again. In 1973, he was convicted of possession of an illegal gun and unlawfully firing a revolver into the air. I don't know if that was true or not. I think the government had it in for him at this point in time, and so it might have been entirely bogus. But he went to jail for about a year and a half and said that he would continue to be beaten and interrogated in prison. When he arrived home from prison in November 1974, back to Baguio City, he went by the treasure site, and he noticed soldiers were standing outside tents near the hospital, right at the treasure site.
Where they had done their excavation.
Mm. Yeah, well, that's where they found the tunnels, yeah. Mm-hmm. Rogelio, at this point, kind of figured they probably had found his treasure, and so he gave up on pressing his claims and mm-hmm. didn't do anything more about it until after Marcos was deposed in 1986.
Mm-hmm.
Then he filed suit in March 1988 in Hawaii against both of the Marcuses for theft and also for human rights abuses. A lot of the information I'm going to show you here comes from the trial. As far as him seeing soldiers at the dig site, the treasure site, there were two witnesses that backed that up. They both worked at the hospital, and they both said that they saw a lot of soldiers and laborers digging around back there, and they said they saw them carrying out boxes or crates that appeared to be extremely heavy. It would be like take like 4 to 6 guys to carry one of these boxes. And one of them said actually one time that he saw a box get dropped and it broke open and a bunch of yellow bars came out of it. So that kind of...
That kind of
backs up Rogelio's story.
Yep.
Another guy named Robert Curtis owned a mining and refining business, and he said he was brought over to the Philippines at the behest of Marcos because he wanted him to melt down a bunch of gold bars to get rid of the hallmarks and cast new bars out of them.
Mm.
So he actually did some work for them in building a smelter. I don't know why they had to call it get him. There had to be somebody in the Philippines who was capable of doing this.
I'm wondering if it was the scale.
Yeah.
The scale of the operation.
Yeah, because apparently, yeah, he saw a room in the presidential palace that was like 40 by 40 feet that was stacked to the ceiling with gold bars, he claims.
That's a pretty big scale.
Yeah.
That's a nice little bit of gold there. Yeah.
Although, you know, if anybody that knows about the gold market, that much gold would flatten the economy globally. Yeah.
You couldn't just dump it on the market all at once.
No.
You'd have to dribble it out a little bit at a time.
No, I mean, we've assigned this random figure or value to gold. There is nothing special about gold. It's just mm-hmm. this thing we all covet. Mm-hmm. So we give it this value. And when you flood the market with it, it's not worth anything anymore.
Yeah, I know.
So you're not going to be, you know, I'm going to sell all the gold and become super rich. No, you're not.
Yeah. You're just going to have to dribble it out a little at a time. It's probably a good way to attract less attention, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There were several other people who testified at the trial that they had also been shown rooms full of gold bars at both palaces. They had a summer palace and a regular palace. And,
of course.
Yeah, yeah. And one guy said he'd also been taken blindfolded and taken to a warehouse, and then because he had questioned the existence of all the gold, and so he saw this huge stack of crates, and then they opened one up, and it was full of gold bars. Although he said that they were rather crudely made, so these might have been some of the re-smelted ones.
Mm-hmm.
He said they had finished like an orange peel.
Mm.
Yeah,
yeah, that's not normal.
Yeah,
it's not great either.
Yeah, I know. So between all these people testifying at the trial, that was enough to convince the jury that Rogelio Rojas was telling the truth, and they certainly believed all the human rights stuff too. So they awarded.
Well, there was plenty of evidence of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. They awarded the Rojas estate and the Golden Buddha Corporation. I forgot to mention the Golden Buddha Corporation. He got a friend in the U.S. to incorporate, and then he signed his interest in the treasure over to the Golden Buddha Corporation. And Rogelio was a shareholder in the corporation.
Mm.
Yeah. And so maybe that's easier to sue in an American court if it's an American corporation versus a Filipino guy.
Possible.
Yeah.
Sounds possible.
Yeah. In 1996, the jury awarded the Rojas estate and Golden Buddha $22 billion plus interest.
Plus interest?
Oh my
gosh. With the interest, it came to over $40 billion.
Wow.
The largest judgment in history. Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. Yeah. Unfortunately, the Hawaiian Supreme Court reversed this a couple of years later on the grounds that even though there was a stack of boxes, nobody actually knows what was in them. It's just a reasonable assumption to assume that they were all full of gold, since one was, but actually...
But like I said, it could have been snakes.
It could have been snakes. It could have been dirt.
Yeah.
It could have been food that had long since rotted away.
It could have been...
Could have been Dracula.
It could have been stacks of unicorn horns. It could have been pixie dust.
Those are actually worth more than gold, though, so that would have meant this stood.
Yeah.
That's good. That's a good point. So the Supreme Court ordered a new hearing to value just the Golden Buddha and the 17 bars of gold. And also a few other things like the coin collection.
The piggy bank.
Yeah, stuff like that. And by the way, I've read the whole opinion. And it's pretty obvious they think the claim of the solid gold Buddha is pure BS.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, like when they talk about the Buddha, they call it the gold Buddha in it, you know.
In quotes.
In quotes, the gold Buddha. So it's they obviously are unconvinced. But the jury, it doesn't really matter. The jury was convinced, I guess. So from a legal standpoint, that's all that really matters.
Mm-hmm.
In the next go-around, they were awarded $13 million in change for the Buddha and the gold bars and all the other stuff. And the Rojas estate was awarded $6 million for the human rights abuses.
Because at this point, Rogelio was dead, right?
Yeah, I forgot to mention he died in 1993.
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. He died kind of young, really.
There was some stress that happened.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. 2 years after he died, this would have been in 1995, his brother Jose commenced an action at the regional trial court in Baguio City asking for release of the Buddha, since they still had it in their custody all these years later, and they wanted it to have it back as a memento to Rogelio.
Were they going to use it as like a headstone?
Paperweight?
Know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Just put it in the yard. A the headstone would be kind of cool.
Yeah, nobody will ever get rid of that memo.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah.
At the initial hearing, he testified that he'd been present when the raiding party took the Buddha out of the house. And the court told him to take a look at the Buddha that they had there and say, is this the same one? And he said it was. And then at a second hearing, Jose said, testified under oath, that the Buddha that had been at Rogelio's house was made of lead or copper, but reporters had added that the Buddha was made of gold. So it might have been the press actually puffed this up a little bit.
Hmm.
Yeah. He also said that Rogelio Rojas knew it was made out of lead or something and not gold, but he said that Rojas had claimed it was gold because he'd been bribed by opposition politicians to do this.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wait, explain that to me. The opposition politician bit?
Yeah, in the Philippines, yeah. He'd been bribed by politicians to say this to pump the story up.
Oh,
yeah.
To then throw dirt at Marcos,
yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. Didn't make that connection right away.
So that sort of impugns some of his other claims, I guess. And by the way, as a counterpoint to that, the same trial record also had a letter to the judge sent by Daniel Cathcart, who was the attorney for Golden Buddha and the Rojas estate. And his letter said that Imelda had met with Jose Rojas and offered him money to petition the court for the brass Buddha and then falsely identify it as the same one as had been taken from Rogelio.
Mm.
So that's confusing.
Plot thickens.
I know. And that's possible.
So the Buddha that was in the court custody had been brass all along?
Brass or lead.
Or lead or something. It wasn't
gold. It
looks
to me like it's painted, and if it really weighed as much as they said it did, then I'm thinking lead.
Yeah, it would have to be lead.
Yeah.
But so that was the case, right? It wasn't... The one that was in court custody wasn't, in fact, full gold.
No.
Okay.
Wasn't gold. Yeah.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah. Did Rogelio Rojas find Yamashita's gold, or at least some of it? Now, he might have. Unsolved Mysteries did an episode about this before he died, and he had a lot of FaceTime on camera. And he seemed sincere and believable, but I still have a few problems with this story.
Such as?
He spots a huge pile of boxes near the Buddha, but he didn't bother opening a single one until the next day.
Well, that's lot of work to get the Buddha out.
Yeah, that's true, I guess.
Tired.
I mean, you know, the Buddha could have been blocking the way to the boxes, right? They had to move it before he could get to the boxes, and by the time they got it out, he was like, coming back tomorrow.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah.
But again, I would be hugely curious about what was in
the boxes. I would
boxes.
Too, but, you know.
I would step over the 3-foot tall Buddha and go open up a box.
Fair, yeah.
That's just me.
Yeah. He left the box of gold bars, 24 gold bars, sitting in the tunnels for several weeks. So we're talking like 3-4 weeks before he came back and retrieved them and then blasted the tunnel shut.
Mm-hmm.
Would you do that?
No.
No.
You either continue to pull stuff out or you shut it up right away.
Exactly.
But he might not have known what he was going to do. He may have thought, I can continue to pull this stuff out, suddenly realized he was out of money, and selling the gold he had wasn't going as quickly as he expected.
Mm.
I mean, people do this stuff in business all the time. Oh, don't worry about it. We'll have this totally taken care of in like 2 days. No big deal. 3 weeks later, they still have nothing done. It happens.
Well, yeah, I don't know. It's just, I still feel like it would have driven me crazy. I mean, if I found this tunnel, and I know that there's at least 24 gold bars sitting there, and that anybody could just, one of the laborers that I had hired, for example, knows where it's at. He could go back there with his buddies and steal all that gold.
Yeah.
You know?
But he never opened the boxes in front of those people.
Maybe
that's why he didn't open the boxes.
Mm-hmm. Maybe he wanted to. That's a possibility. But still, if those people saw the pile of boxes, then wouldn't you? I mean, you're not Rogelio. You're one of the laborers. You see the pile of boxes. Aren't you going to go and pry one open yourself?
So, most people would.
Yeah. So I'm just saying this is from if I were Rogelio, I would not be able to sleep, knowing that this tunnel was open and that the people that had seen the pile of boxes could go back at any time and take them, or knowing that some random dude could just come along and discover the opening and go in there and discover and take all this stuff.
I agree.
You know, I wouldn't be able to sleep. And yet he went several weeks.
Yeah,
with
I agree.
Just leaving all the gold in there.
So I think as we've done in the past, we're presuming that the crew is with him and in there working the entire time and therefore intimately familiar with everything that's going on, when in fact they were hunting around in a bunch of frickin' caves for weeks on end.
Yeah, that's true.
And
they
it is possible that once he found the concrete bit that he had to break through, that he was like, oh, well, I don't want to pay anybody else to do it. I'll just swing a sledgehammer for a day, and broke through it himself and then said, you know, hired these 10 men or whatever it took, said, hey, I have this thing in this tunnel I want you to pull out. And they just, completely different than the other crew maybe, unawares, walk in, oh yeah, this thing's heavy, and haul it out and have no idea what they're walking into.
Well, you know, it's true enough, but still, there's still the possibility that some random dude could discover the cave, discover the tunnels.
You're right. I'm just saying that it may not have been a situation where the workers knew what was going on to then get the idea of, well, I'm going to go back on my own and see what it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. But I still would not have left that pile of gold sitting there.
Oh, no, me either.
No. I mean, I don't think anybody would.
You'd have to be guano crazy to do that.
Yeah, pretty much. I think so. Yeah. Next, he was trying to sell the Buddha to raise funds to finance the removal of the boxes of gold bars in the tunnel. But he sold 7 gold bars. That should have netted him a big punch of money.
Yeah, should have.
Unless he got swindled. Didn't know the value of the gold he was getting.
Oh, I'm sure.
Or it wasn't high quality gold. I mean, there's a bunch of ores here.
Well, I'm sure he had to sell it at a discounted price. I'm sure he didn't get full gold value for it.
But it may not have been 22 or 24 karat gold. It could have been low quality gold, which therefore is worth less money.
Yeah, but still, it would have been worth quite a bit.
It would have been worth a chunk of change, but then if you say it's low quality and then you're selling it at a cut rate and then you don't really know what that cut rate should be, so your gold buyer, who's kind of a swindly little guy, knocks you down even more, you could be getting 10 or 20% of what the value of what you're selling is.
It still
should have been enough to fund some more hauling out of stuff.
Especially since my question is like, why not just do a couple bars a day? You just walk over to your little cave, right? I mean, the impression I have is it was close to his home. You just walk over there and throw a couple in a box and... put it over your shoulder and walk home. And
do that. I would.
Why? Yeah. Like, what's the financing need? I mean, to do it in one fell swoop, of course you need the financing, but.
Yeah, you know, what I would do is, what I would have done is I would have just hired some laborers, people that were trustworthy, that I knew weren't going to kill me for the gold or anything. And just say, look, you help me with this, I'll give you each a couple of bars of gold.
Yeah. That works too.
Yeah, that's what I would have done.
I would have too, but hey.
The one thing that I like the idea of just going and packing out a couple of bars a day, except that gold bars, even when they're little ones, they're freaking heavy. I don't know the exact number, but I'm going to ballpark it between 50 to 70 pounds is what I want to say a bar of gold weighs.
So throw it in a backpack.
Yeah.
But that means you can carry one or two.
Maybe three.
Not three in a backpack. A very physically fit person could pack three a day, but you pack that for 5-10 miles, that's a workout and a half.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be exhausting and a daunting task.
Well, you're gaining money for gaining muscle.
That's true.
Yeah. You're not, it's like the best gym workout except for free.
Absolutely.
I mean, actually, you're getting paid a lot of money for it. Because that was the other thing, right, is that the cost of gold per ounce was like almost $900 at that point, right?
I don't remember.
It was 30 something. It was more than...
It had climbed up a ways from there. I think it might have been more like 500 or 600 even back.
But even then, if we're saying it's 50 or 70 pounds, right? We're saying it's like 400-ish ounces.
Yeah, that's a standard. 400 is kind of the standard.
I mean, if you're getting even $500 per ounce, that's incredible.
That's a lot of
money. And even if you're only making 20% of that, you should be able to easily finance. With one bar, getting the rest of that stuff out of there.
Absolutely, especially since labor in the Philippines is really pretty cheap.
Yeah, and then you just say, you just say, here's a bar.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody. Everybody
help me out
money.
And I'll toss a bar your way. Yeah. The next thing I want to know is, who did he sell the bars to? He sold 7 bars, supposedly.
Yeah.
Lawyers never asked him?
Yeah, that seems
never
wrong.
Never asked him, because after all, that guy would have been a great witness, because it would have established that Rogelio did indeed have some gold bars in his possession.
Also, they couldn't find somebody to lie about it, even if
I know.
Like, what kind of lawyers are
you? You're not much of a lawyer. So evidence regarding the gold bars is really pretty thin when we come down to it. Another thing that I really kind of scratched my head over is that his partner and friend, Albert Fujigami, was never heard from. They didn't track him down. They didn't track down any of the hired laborers, perhaps, that helped out in their little dig and had them testify.
Well, it may have been that they didn't know who the laborers were.
Well, possibly.
They're just guys he hires.
And maybe Albert's dead by now. I don't know.
Yeah.
But still, I'm kind of surprised that they were not able to find any of those people. But,
and that would have been something that they would have been able to just do like a deposition in the Philippines for, right? I mean, the trials were happening in Hawaii. It's not cheap to fly people places. It's not.
Yeah.
No, not everybody wants to fly places, so that would have been, right?
Yeah.
That's what we're saying, is we could have just...
Could have gone to the Philippines.
They could have just done some depositions. Okay, great. Just wanted to be clear.
Yeah. Statement on the record.
Yeah. So, long story short, I really don't think Rogelio found anything other than a lead Buddha. Because, again, the people who actually saw the boxes... And we don't know how many people other than Rogelio saw the boxes, but any of those people that saw it were never part of this whole thing. They never testified. So we only have Rogelio's word that there was this huge pile of boxes. And so I'm kind of thinking maybe he only found the lead Buddha and nothing else.
Well, and furthermore, there were a lot of people who testified that they saw the boxes, but at Marcos's palaces, right?
Well, no, yeah, they said some people said they saw boxes, not necessarily the
or
exact
even
same
just
boxes.
Gold.
They also saw just stacks and stacks of gold.
Right, so
bars.
There's really no evidence to suggest that Marcos stole that stuff.
Yeah, the only
away, right that
yeah,
it,
the only real
that
evidence was the dig at the hospital.
Yeah,
yeah, which seems to be supported.
Yeah, but also, in fairness, if you just kind of figured out that this guy who's been claiming all this stuff, that's where he claimed to have been digging, it might warrant a dig just to see.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it was a lie, you know, you wouldn't know. You'd just say, oh, yeah, this guy said he found a bunch of gold here, so we'll go dig there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Wow. Yeah.
What's the harm? You have a lot of military.
I know. Just, yeah.
Send those guys.
Well, I mean, there were other people involved, too, besides Roy Haleo, so somebody else might have squealed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you didn't hear from them.
Yeah. That could be. Well, let's move on to our last theory. So, do you guys have anything more to say about Rogelio? Do you
no.
think he found it? Do you think he didn't find it?
No.
No, but I can't believe this is our last theory. You've left one out.
Oh, Mr. Gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. We can talk about Mr. Gold.
Well, we'll talk about Mr. Gold after this, because Mr. Gold is mostly just for fun.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Our last theory. Yamashita's gold is just an urban legend. In favor of this, I have to say, a lot of people have been looking for the treasure for decades now, and they haven't found a trace of it. And so you would think somebody would have found something by now.
It does seem suspicious.
Yeah, yeah. Also, why would the Japanese send everything to the Philippines? It would have made it more, really, it would have made more sense to ship it overland, say, to Shanghai or Korea, which are much closer to Japan, and go from there. And if it did wind up, and it was too risky to take to Japan on ships from the Philippines, assuming it had wound up in the Philippines, then why not just use submarines?
Well, the other thing that I wonder is if they're putting everything on a boat and they're taking it somewhere, why wouldn't they take it to the mainland? Because they controlled huge chunks of the mainland at that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They could have taken it to Korea, which is kind of in a straight line. Mm-hmm. It's one of the shortest water distances to Japan from the mainland.
Yeah.
And then you make the run from there.
Yeah.
Because that's your narrowest...
Yeah, that's what Joe's saying.
That's
yeah.
what I was saying, yeah.
yeah.
I mean, that's what that would have made more sense.
We're all arguing the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And Shanghai is actually... It's probably... It's a little further away, but still, it's a lot, hell of a lot closer than the Philippines.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really see why they would ship all that stuff to the Philippines to begin with. It also seems to me that if it did wind up in the Philippines, that getting all that loot back to Japan would have been a very high priority, don't you think?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That would have been so they would have found a way to do it. Submarines, whatever, you know?
Yeah,
they would have
planes, something.
Yeah. Against this theory is it's been proven that the existence of urban legends is itself an urban legend. I mean, really, people don't just make stuff up.
No, they
never
don't.
Happened.
Never. No. Never happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you guys have any favorites? What's your favorite theory?
Oh, were we going to talk about...
Oh, we're going to talk about Mr. Gold for a second.
Oh, okay.
Because I came across this one, and when I saw your notes, I was laughing that you had intentionally left out Mr. Gold. Because he loves gold, because his name is Mr. Gold.
I know.
Which is a pseudonym. Mm-hmm. Would a pseudonym be the right word?
Yeah.
Because we don't know who this guy is. He's... The AmericanFreePress.net, I believe it is, has been putting out his story. They put it out over the course of like 6 months or a year. Some guy who is an American citizen says he went down there and he found all the gold and he hired a company to excavate it and pack it out, and that company never showed. Years later, he gets some of it, and then suddenly the feds show up at his door because his name is on record with this other company, the one that never showed up, which, by the way, the name of the company is BIM Incorporated, which the BIM is in capital letters. But if you look at it and you flip it around, because I do word jumbles all the time, it's MIB.
Yeah.
As in Men in Black.
Yeah.
Men in Black Incorporated. And so now he's been detained by the U.S. government because he's got, you know, $100 trillion worth of gold. And he's on these trumped up mail fraud charges, is why he's still in jail. And it's a fun tale.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll leave it at that, as it's a really fun tale, but nothing of it even smells remotely of truth.
No, not even slightly.
Yeah. work of fiction is what I would say on that one. But it's one of the things that you find. It's one of the initial things you find when you start searching for this story. So that's why I wanted to make sure we include it.
Yeah, yeah, it does come up. But yeah, it's obviously nonsense. But so what do you guys think? Have any favorite theories?
I don't think it actually exists.
Yeah, me neither.
I don't think they would have taken the time. If they're looting jewelry and everything from everyone and it's full of precious gems, that's a lot of work to separate everything and then melt it down and then pack that out instead of just chucking it in a box and packing it all out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I also think that if soldiers are looting things, they're probably going to keep that stuff.
Yeah.
A fair amount of it, maybe not all
of it. A portion
of it, right?
Yeah.
They're gonna keep a cut. I think that supposedly this whole thing was organized from the highest levels, and so it was like they did a fairly decent job, supposedly.
But again, Steve's point is totally right. You just have jewelry, right? If you have jewelry, you just toss it in a box or whatever, and it's harder to trace at that point. I mean.
Yeah.
You know, the number of super unique pieces of jewelry out there is
because you don't want to spend the time and effort it takes for your people who you are employing to sit down and separate all of this. I mean, the Germans did this when they looted everybody, but they used slave labor to do that separation process. The Japanese didn't have a whole huge swath of that available, so that's a lot of effort on their part.
Well, also, it just doesn't make sense.
No.
That you would do that in the middle of a war.
Especially when you're in these small areas.
Yeah,
they did. And they would have probably, actually, not all of it would have been melted down into gold bars, but they would have come across gold bars in banks and places like that.
Yeah.
I just can't see them shipping it to the Philippines. It makes no sense.
No, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Sorry, everybody. I guess it doesn't exist. Well, that's about it for this week, unless you guys have anything more you want to say about Yamashita's gold.
No.
Yeah. Mm-mm. All right. Well, if you have any thoughts about it out there, listener person, you can call.
I like that designation. Yeah, they are now not listeners. They're listener person.
That's right. If you want to find a place to download our episodes, because obviously, since you're listening, you obviously don't have a clue how to download our episodes, but you can find it. You can find every episode on our website, which is thinkingsidewayspodcast.com. You can leave comments. You can check our links, because we have links to a lot of these mysteries. And, of course, you can listen to episodes. You can also find us on iTunes. You can subscribe, and hopefully you will also leave us a review. Even more hopefully, it'll be a good review. That'd be nice. You can also stream us from pretty much anywhere. There's billions and billions of apps for that, right?
Yes.
Billions. Yeah.
That is a real number.
Yeah. Yes. You'll also find us on Facebook. You can like us and follow us. Yes, please like us. Please. And, of course, we're on Twitter. We're a little different on Twitter. We're thinking sideways. We dropped
the G. We're cooler.
Yeah, we're cooler. Yeah.
And to be hip.
Last of all, if you want to send us a message at all, you can email us at thinkingsidewayspodcast@gmail.com.
We also are launching a new project this week.
We are.
We are officially on a site called Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/thinkingsideways, you can pledge to donate a dollar amount per episode that we release. That is it's kind of like we're doing the OPB membership drive.
Yeah, we're doing
NPR
a fundraiser
drive.
Yeah,
but this one will never end.
It will never ever end. But there are some pretty cool incentives if you donate, more than X number of dollars per episode. And there's a video that explains everything on there.
It's a video of us.
It is a video of us. So go ahead and go over there if you think that might be something that you'd be into.
Yeah, when we give that, kind of break it down, and Patreon on their site as well.
Yep.
Gives all the good particulars of how it operates and how it sets up. So it's pretty straightforward.
Though. Yeah. So
that's voluntary, of course.
Yeah. So check that out, or there will be a link on our website. Not a wink. Also a wink.
I'll put a wink.
Yeah.
There's a wink. They're perfect. All winks.
We have lots and lots of winks on the website.
We wink to all our websites.
Okay, guys. I think we're going to get out
of
here.
Yeah, we should probably call this one done. Yeah.
All right. See you next week, folks.
Later, guys.
Bye, guys.